Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria on this very special Sunday. In a spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather. In this moment, we could also remember how recently Earl Claxton Jr., a Tsawot elder, taught us that the people who lived in the area, now across the road, were called Wismayath. Wuh means people of, and Smyath means deer, the people of the deer. My name is Samantha, and I'm pleased to serve as your worship associate. Today we gather to hear old stories in new ways on this third Sunday in our exploration of the theme of presence, the practice of being, in just a few short days from the shortest day of the year. We are so happy that you all joined us this morning. Today's service is for all ages. Children are invited to sit with their grown-ups, and I hope you can help make sure that your grown-ups stay well-behaved for the whole service. There is child minding available in the sunflower room for those who prefer, and there's also coloring sets for those who prefer. Maybe some adults want some of those too. You are all welcome here, especially those of you who are searching for a little extra light in this darkest season. In worship, we gather to celebrate the light inside us, between us, and around us, the light we kindle in this faith community, and the light we shine in the world through the practice of being present. Today, we'll be presenting the story of the Huron Carol, Expect Mistakes. We haven't had a lot of rehearsal time, so this will be a morning of fun and forgiveness.
We ministers move in many places and many ways, but today we're here to remember that presence comes in many forms, to remind ourselves that the stories of our lives matter, that how we tell them, how we hear them, how we look at them matter. So for a moment, I want you to do a few gestures with me, because it reminds us, I was thinking about how we're going to tell the Huron Carol from many vantage points, that we sometimes get locked into our own way of seeing things. So I want you to take your hands, put them around your face like blinders. We talk sometimes about having tunnel vision. And one of the amazing things about being human is we can all only ever see the world through our own thoughts, our own minds, our own perspectives. Now, take those blinders off and hold your hands open and look out and around. Look at the trees out these windows here. Look at the sky out those windows there. This morning, our story of the Huron Carol reminds us that we need each other to see more clearly. I need each of you to have a more panoramic view of life because my own narrow, confined view is not enough. I will inevitably be short-sighted. I will inevitably be stuck in my own ways. And so I need your insights, your vision, your ways of seeing to help me. The Huron Carol that we share with you this morning is like that. The French settler that you will see in this story had a very clear goal and a very clear lens through which he saw the world. He was sent to convert the Aboriginal people of the lands that he came to and did not know how to honor what those people already knew and believed. Didn't know that they already had their own great spirit. And so I'm going to invite our compassionate beings. They're ready. Here come our compassionate beings to come up and help me light our chalice this morning. You'll notice as they come forward that compassionate beings take many forms. They can be in the form of princesses and cats and turtle, what is it? It's a combination. Turtle squirrels.
No, Squirtle.
Squirtle. It's a squirtle. And this, a lot of our compassionate beings have been studying a truth and reconciliation curricula with Forrest Smith, who's been one of their teachers. And one of the books they read was by an indigenous author, Monique Gray Smith, who signed a book for us, for all of you. It says, To the Children of the Unitarian Church. And there, as our chalice lighting words, we're going to share some of the words from her book. So, can you guys, I'm going to give the microphone to Forrest.
You hold me up when you are kind to me. You hold me up when you share with me. You hold me up when you learn with me.
You hold me up when you comfort me. You hold me up when you comfort me. Oops, the wrong one. You hold me up when you are kind to me. You hold me up when you share with me. You hold me up when you learn with me.
You hold me up.
You hold me up.
When you comfort me.
When you comfort me.
You hold me up when you respect me.
You hold me up when you respect me.
Okay. You hold me up.
You hold me up.
I hold you up.
I hold you up.
We hold each other up.
We hold each other up.
You hold me up when you are kind to me. You hold me up when you are nice to me. You hold me up when you share with me.
You hold me up. I hold you up. We hold each other up.
So in honor of the ways that we hold each other up, that we hold each other up in our grief, that we hold each other up in our joys, that we hold each other up through all of life, we light our chalice this morning. Blessed be.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. All right, well, could you hear most of what I said? Phew. They traveled about on foot and, of course, in canoes. Birch bark canoes, the length and breadth of their homeland that was very watery. So you know the setting. Now perhaps you want to know a bit about this European guy. We got to go to France. And a man named Jean de Brébeuf. We're not quite ready, guys. We're in France still. And actually, this part's not funny because he was very sick. He almost died, Jean de Brébeuf, and the Jesuits with whom he was studying wanted him to be able to go on to the next life, ordained as a priest, because he was so close. And so they ordained him, but then he did not die.
Just put it down.
Oh, Chris Wolf. I just want to say thank you to Samantha for warning you guys. Anyway, Father Jean recovered. But he did not feel worthy to be a priest in France, and he asked the Jesuits to send him on a mission. And before long, he arrived in Canada, marveling at the wonderful water all around. And soon enough, that Jean de Brébeuf, who didn't know how to swim, was on the water, traveling there, deep, deep into the forest. Of course, he was paddled by Wendat warriors, but here we have the water element providing the water and the air element holding the canoe afloat. So eventually, Father Jean found himself in a village on the shores of a lake where most people were living in longhouses and a few were in teepees like the one on our stage. Father Jean found the Wendat people quiet, and he quickly realized that if he wanted them to be able to understand him, he would need to learn their language. In his journal, Jean wrote that the children were his most important teachers. With their help, he learned the language so well that he was able to create the first ever Wendat dictionary that is in use today.
There we go. It warmed my heart when I saw that Father Jean was learning the language of the Wendats.
It filled me with hope that the priest might learn from them.
The French priest lived with the Wendat people for more than 2 decades. He loved them, and for the most part, they loved him. At times, he felt great joy. Often, he experienced hardship. When times were hard, he reminded himself that he was on a mission. What he was doing was important, for he would share the true word of God. As he struggled to help the Wendat understand the truth, he met many challenges. The people indulged him by listening, but repeatedly told him, "Your world is different from ours." The elements and compassionate beings, remember, you guys really wondered why he couldn't seem to understand what they were saying, even though he spoke their language. I think it was Kat who said, "I think maybe he just thinks he's right." And then I think maybe it was our wood nymph here who said, "If only he would learn my wood nymph language," right? You said that? "Then I could tell him and he would understand." But he didn't understand. Jean de Brébeuf was a good man, but a man with a narrow worldview. A man who wanted to convert the Wendat people to Christianity. A man who wanted them to give up their spiritual practices. He was part of a system of colonialism that left a legacy of damage. But there was something that Father Jean and the Wendats had in common. That was the love of song. Thought the priest. "Perhaps the Wendats will be able to understand the Christian story if I tell it in their language and get them to sing it." So one of the priest's favorite melodies, was a traditional French folk song, "Une jeune pucelle." As he hummed the tune one day, he found sudden inspiration and began writing the lyrics. He got straight to the point in the first verse.
"Have courage, humans. Jesus is born. The spirit of our old ways who had us as prisoners has fled. Do not listen to it. It corrupts the spirits of our minds. For Jesus, he is born."
He also said that the shamans were deceivers and charlatans.
It made me burn with anger.
Well, perhaps you'd feel better to know that in the version that appears in our hymnal, the man who reinterpreted the lyrics, Jesse Edgar Middleton, dropped that verse. That was in 1926, in an era of exoticism. Don't our compassionate beings make a perfect little angel choir?
"'Twas in the moon of winter time, when all the birds had fled, that mighty Gitche Manitou sent angel choirs instead."
Now, what else did he need to tell the story? Perhaps there's something here.
Within a lodge of broken bark, the tender babe was found, a ragged robe of rabbit skin enwrapped his beauty round.
Brebeuf surrounded Jesus with hunters instead of shepherds. Three chiefs replaced the magi. They arrived on horseback.
The earliest moon of winter time is not so round and fair as was the ring of glory on the helpless infant there. Three chiefs from far before him knelt with gifts of fox and beaver pelt.
The literal translation of that verse tells us that Brebeuf had the chiefs anoint Jesus' scalp with sunflower oil, a Wendat ritual of great reverence.
I wonder how the Wendat felt about John pretending.
Pretending that their spiritual practice is one in the Bible story.
And I wonder what it might have been like if Father John had not only appropriated practices from Wendat life, what if he had recognized that the Bible story is not the only story told? What if Jean de Brebeuf had truly listened to the Wendat people and been open and present to their beliefs? Father Jean was just one of hundreds of Christian missionaries who worked amongst Indigenous people all across Canada. Last weekend, I happened to find out about an art sale at Sayot, and I went out there and had a lovely conversation with a wonderful carver and storyteller from Chemainus named George Seymour. He told me that when he learned of the damage that residential schools inflicted on his people, though he'd been a choir boy, he left the church. Still, in the 2011 census, 60% of Indigenous people continued to identify as Christian. One of them, David Bouchard, is a Métis and a very prolific author. He has recently reworked the Huron Carol with words that he feels better reflect the Indigenous story of Christmas. In his preface, Bouchard states, "According to traditional First Nations knowledge and belief, Jesus was reincarnated in the mid-1500s before contact between the white European and the Wendat. To the Wendat and the others of the Haudenosaunee Nation, Jesus was known as Degenawada, the peacemaker. He brought the great law of peace to the Haudenosaunee."
Perhaps the nativity story wasn't such a surprise to the Wendat.
Had Father Jean truly opened his ears, mind, and heart, he would have realized that the story of the great peacemaker had many elements that are the same as the story of Jesus.
Bouchard tells us that Degenawada was born in a teepee to a young, unwed mother. The grandmother was both unhappy and worried. She subjected the baby to great trials of earth, air, fire, and water. The baby survived, and so the grandmother saw that she must allow him to live. She must protect him, and she must honor him with the name the Creator had chosen, Degenawada, the great peacemaker. It is said that he worked closely with Hiawatha and other great chiefs to form the Confederacy of the Six Haudenosaunee Nations. David Bouchard says that the Huron Carol is about the one Jesus Christ born in Bethlehem and born again among the Ukwenua, or true-hearted people. Let us join together in singing parts of David Bouchard's version of the carol. It's a little different. It has some similarities, but it's a little different. So Sandra and I are hoping it will all work out. So there are about 2 million indigenous worldviews in Canada, because there are about 2 million indigenous people. So David Bouchard's perspective is, of course, just one of them. But I felt so moved by this ability that he describes for himself and others to incorporate, to accept more than one great story, to find a way to work them together. And I feel that if we could all be open and present enough to accept wisdom in whatever form it takes, even if we don't believe in the facts, then we might be happier people. I feel like the most important question we can ask ourselves is not what can we do, but how can we be? It's a question I feel like I've heard asked when I've been in gatherings with First Nations elders. And when we ask, how can we be, we begin to open ourselves to the many ways that there are of being. We prepare the ground for the great Canadian experiment that's described by philosopher and novelist John Rolston Saul when he says, "The notion that dissimilar peoples can share land, resources, power, and dreams while respecting and sustaining their differences." We prepare ourselves to be truly present.
So let us adopt now a posture of that openness as we move into a time of meditation and reflection. Breathing in possibility, breathing out our best intentions. Adopting a posture of openness, willingness, asking ourselves once again, how can we be? How can we be open to what we don't yet know? How can we be open to the wisdom of others? How can we be in a way that reminds ourselves that we are not at the center of everything? And how can we be in a way that allows us to fully commit our lives to being allies and partners in seeing things whole and in making the world a fairer place for all peoples and indeed all beings. Let us take now a few moments of silence to think about how we can be, to think about how we have been and how we would like to be as a new year rapidly approaches. And perhaps as well in this moment of silence, you will bring into your hearts those people that you have with you, those about whom you are worried, those for whom your heart aches, those who make you glad to be alive this day. Let us take now a moment of shared silence. For the ways our lives expand when we love other people, for the ways that we can grow and change and encompass yet more compassion, we give our thanks this day. Blessed be, and amen.
In 1953, another French-born priest, René Fumelot, came to the Northwest Territories as a young man and traveled to Fort Good Hope, involved in a long boat journey down the Mackenzie River into a new world. Through all of the years, his attachment to the Dene people deepened. He celebrated their strength and their ancestral wisdom and committed himself to their desire for change. René is known far and wide for his storytelling, two films, thousands of photographs, and his two books of poetry.
One of his poems, The Nay Christmas, portrays his openness for the Denis way of being. Nolan and Jen will read from that poem that begins with René being impressed by the beautiful drawings created by a Denis artist named John.
So, here's what I was thinking of. The Christmas story has been drawn in many ways. Could you draw a Christmas story as if it happened here?
I don't know. What's on your mind?
Well, there are no donkeys here, so let's pretend that Joseph and Mary traveled with four dogs and a toboggan. They crossed Jackfish Creek, pitched their tents on the other side, and that's where Jesus was born.
John thought about it, commenting on the houses on the other side of the creek and the tent of Mary and Joseph on the other side.
A week later, the priest met John and asked him about the drawing.
I'll get to it.
A week later, he said, John, Christmas is getting here. Will you have the time to make your drawing?
I guess I will. I think so.
When the priest next met John and the drawing was not yet done, the priest told John he felt John didn't really want to do it. He asked John why.
That drawing didn't make any sense to me.
What do you mean?
You see, if Mary and Joseph had come to our village, they could have walked into any Denis house and the people would have said, come on in, you're welcome.
In the introduction to this book, René Fumelot thanked John and said, keep challenging us and helping us to live meaningful stories.
So if Mary and Joseph were walking into the Inn of Victoria, would your inn be open? How can we be in our lives so that we could welcome any and all people and the complexity and the fullness of their stories and their lives? Not trying to convert them, not trying to make them into something they're not, not trying to make them more like us, but their complex selves. Full of the beautifulness, full of the challenge, full of the struggle, full of the tears, full of the mistakes. If, like every morning, as Sam brought up this morning, if we could begin every morning with forgiveness and light for all people, wouldn't that be a great gift? Not just Christmas season, but every season and every day of our lives. May the inn of your heart always be open. Blessed be, and amen.